Hello, this is Paula with the Vermilion County News on Thursday, January 22nd, 2026. We'll start with a story titled Funding Danville Rescue Mission Discuss No Action. This is written by Christy Jankowski. Frigid temperatures are coming this weekend, leaving those without shelter in an emergency need. On Tuesday evening, the Danville City Council heard from the mayor and other officials about the crisis. Logan Cronk addressed the board about the needs of Danville Rescue Mission, a men's overnight shelter in the city. It's $1.7 million just to get it to code with an elevator, Cronk said about the Bowman Avenue site, which the city had initially considered for the mission. It's $2.3 million to rehabilitate, and that's with a lot of items without phase two design in the structure. There could be a more costly sprinkler system, but that we don't know how it operates, and accessibility issues in the bathroom. Cronk added that the city looked into a smaller structure on Bowman, the former Day Spring Center, as well, but it would also need a kitchen and a roof costing around $120,000. The mission has seen an uptick in people in need with the cold snaps, but Cronk said they have not had to turn anyone away for maximum capacity with 24 total beds, with at most 16 to 17 in use. Mayor Ricky Williams Jr. said he did not think it would be wise to spend the dollars. So after a lot of discussion with both of them, Williams said, given that we have not been close to capacity for the last eight or nine months that they've been operating, it's our recommendation that it would not be wise to spend $2 million or more to rehabilitate. Alderman Tricia T. questioned the mayor on his intentions during the meeting. So is that this meant to be the long-term solution, or is this a short-term solution, she asked. Williams responded with, I think it's really important that we have the data to know where we would have most effectively mobilized the resources that we have to help the people that need it the most. Teague emphasized addressing the crisis before beds fill up. As you know, what data suggests is that the issue of homelessness is becoming a bigger problem than it's ever been before, Teague responded. I'm just wondering what happens when we eventually meet max capacity very quickly and then run out of space. Cronk addressed the issue of meeting maximum capacity. We will have a triggering mechanism whenever there is a overflow, Cronk said. With this recommendation of rehabilitating there, I'll call the office building right now. It starts overflowing. They can utilize the space. Michael Ewing, director of the Danville Rescue Mission, spoke following this discussion. We need Danville to stand up behind Danville, Ewing said. We always talk about homelessness and go back to our own homes and all that. He continued with, I know there's some guys out there like me that hard times that need some help to get out so they can become taxpayer citizens. As for warming centers during the cold snap, Williams showed no signs of opening any, expressing in the past that it was a waste. In terms of warming centers, the first 3 years that I was mayor, I opened warming centers for 4 times, and we never had one person ever show up to them, Williams said. Even in the most extreme weather, the Red Cross expressed to us frustration in terms of, hey, Mayor, we're putting all these resources here and nobody's showing up. Deanne Ryan, a dwelling place volunteer, spoke up during the meeting as well. There's a reason people don't go to the places that don't go to warming centers, and we owe it to them to find out why, Ryan said. I've worked with the homeless for a long time and many agencies and in many departments, many different ones, and there are women who can't leave their abusive husbands because there's nowhere for them and their children to go. Williams made sure to thank the Danville Rescue Mission. They've had a lot of people come and go and give up on them, but they have never given up on the men, and they've never given up on this community, Williams said. No discussions were made to fund the Danville Rescue Mission on Tuesday evening. There are multiple shelters in Vermilion County to help those experiencing a housing crisis. There is the Danville Rescue Mission, which serves men transgender men and their children. The dwelling place of Vermilion County, which offers housing for up to 90 days, the Salvation Army provides transitioning housing, and the Vermilion Community Restoration has a men's and women's and children's shelter. Next story is titled 3.8 Magnitude Earthquake Rocks the Prairie State, again written by Christy Jankowski. Some were rattled awake early Tuesday morning with the shakes from a 3.8 magnitude earthquake in the central Illinois. The quake happened near Taylorville around 1:30 a.m. Robert Bauer, a principal engineering geologist with the Illinois State Geological Survey, part of the Prairie Research Institute at the University of Illinois, said the state has experienced 153 earthquakes measuring 3 magnitude or higher in the past 100 years. The earthquakes take place down in what we call the crystalline basement, and that is the old volcanic surface of the earth before we had layers of sediments laid down on top of that we're all familiar with, our limestone, coal, shell. So that's where all of our earthquakes take place, Bauer said. While there is current data on earthquakes, Bauer said the seismograph instruments used to measure the magnitude did not come about until the 70s. Prior to that, he said, events were recorded in newspapers, diaries, journals, and other written forms of documentation. That might mean that a fracture a couple of football fields long to half a mile long moves maybe about half an inch, Bauer said about the 3.8 magnitude earthquake. Put your two hands together in a prayer motion. Push them together very lightly. Now try to slide them past each other, and all of a sudden they jump. That's an earthquake. And it may seem like there have been more quakes in the Prairie State lately, but Bauer said according to the United States Geological Survey, there were not any obvious increases or decreases. You know, if you want to look at years, last year we had 5, Bauer said. The year before that, there were 10. And before that, in 2021, there were only 2. And in 2020, there were 5. In Illinois, Bauer said, the earthquakes occur in the deep of the crystalline basement. It's not like California, Bauer said. We're in the middle of a floating plate on the surface of Earth, and we have mapped faults throughout different parts of the state, but we don't have any earthquakes lining up along those areas. There's not a concentration. Bauer said the difference with California is there were two plates sliding past each other at a known rate. He continued to say that ones Illinois does experience are mostly in the southern part of the state. 90% of our earthquakes are in the southern third of the state, Bauer said, and 4% are in the center and about 6% in the northern part of the state. And for one to really cause any structural damage, Bauer says, a 2.1 magnitude can cause some cosmetic damage like bricks being knocked off or chimney damage. On April 18th of 2008, we had a 5.2 magnitude event down by Mount Carmel, Bauer said. It woke me up at 4:30 in the morning. Well, over 200 structures had some damage to it. From it, while Illinois and Indiana may not experience many quakes, there are chances you may experience one while traveling. Bauer said the main thing to do when the shaking begins is duck, cover, and hold. Number one, if you're indoors, stay indoors, Bauer said. You do what is called duck, cover, and hold, which means maybe duck down under something like a table or alongside a bed or couch. And well, if you're under a table, you want to hang on to the table so it doesn't slide off of you. The main thing, Bauer said, is to protect yourself from things falling down on you. We typically don't have structural damage to the point where total buildings are collapsing, Bauer said. You don't run outside along the shaking because things are falling off buildings. We have lots of pictures from the 5.2 magnitude event in Mount Carmel of lots of bricks on the ground right in front of doorways, so never do that. What is interesting is what dogs will do before one hits. There are pictures of dogs getting up and running outdoors, Bauer said. What not to do as a human, he said, if you are outside, to move from away from buildings from underneath trees because of the shaking is really large. It could break it a branch and get out from under power lines. If you are driving, Barrett said, it will probably feel like the wind is blowing, but it gets incredibly violent. But if it gets incredibly violent, make sure your car is not underneath a bridge and do not get out. Those who felt this week's earthquake or any future quake can enter information to the United States Geological Survey's website about what was felt, how it felt, and see data from others in the state. Next story is titled Prohibition-era-themed event coming to the Fisher Theater, again written by Christy Jankowski. Step back in time to the Prohibition era with themed cocktails at the Fisher Theater on Friday with Hush, a backstage speakeasy with Obsidian Coffee. The Fisher Theater, built in 1884, operated during Prohibition. Ashton Greer, theater director, stated that tickets are for the event, which will feature jazz music and a magician, cost $50 per person and include two drinks. Those wanting to attend should act quickly to secure tickets. Spots are limited and selling fast. They were close to selling out, Greer said. I think we've sold about two-thirds of them. In keeping with the speakeasy theme, entrance to the event is through the theater back door with a password. We're going to email all of our ticket holders a password the morning of the event, and we're actually using the back door to the alley in the alley to get into the theater, Greer said. So it's going to appear like a theater is actually closed, like the lights aren't going to be on, the marquee is not on. It's kind of like a secret party. Tyler Tarchini, owner of Obsidian Coffee, said the event is unique in how it is taking place. A lot of people are going to see the side of the Fisher Theater that they never got to see unless they performed on stage itself, Tarchini said. Ghosts will partake on stage. Greer is excited about the Gatsby-themed event and encourages people to come dressed in their best attire. It's really just like a really intimate, exclusive Prohibition-era styled event, Greer added. I don't know if you've ever had Tyler's Obsidian Coffee owner cocktails, but they're so good. All of his cocktails are from that era. It's just going to be like kind of an immersive experience. I have three different drinks, all dating pre-Prohibition, Tarchini said. I have a drink from the 1700s that I'm presenting. It's a punch that takes about 4 days to make. I'm really excited about presenting that to the public. One of the drinks the coffee owner says goes back a ways in time. It's a clarified milk punch, so there's no actual milk in it, but the milk sugars and they weigh into the protein start to separate, Tarchini has described. It dates back before Benjamin Franklin, but he became really famous doing this clarifying technique. Tarchini doesn't want to give away too many of his secrets, though, so to find out, you will have to buy a ticket to Hush, a backstage speakeasy with Obsidian Coffee on Friday night, taking place from 7 to 10 p.m. Obsidian Coffee is currently closed for the month of January, but it will reopen for the three-year anniversary party taking place on Sunday. The shop serves coffees, a variety of cocktails, beer, and wine. Tickets can be purchased on the Fisher Theater's website. And there's Tyler Tarchini, owner of Obsidian Coffee, will be serving up cocktails Friday night during Hush, a Prohibition-themed event at the Fisher Theater. And there's a picture of him doing a cocktail. And then there's a picture of the Fisher Theater will transform into a Prohibition-era speakeasy Friday. Tickets for the event are available for purchase on the theater website. Okay, we'll run through the obituaries. Natalie Marie Stubbe Powell. Natalie Marie Stubbe Powell, 78, of Danville, passed away on January 15th at Pleasant Meadows Senior Living in Chrisman, Illinois at 7:20 p.m. A celebration of life will be held on Monday, January 26th at 11 a.m. at the Trinity Lutheran Church at 824 East Main Street in Danville, Illinois. Pastor Kent Tibben will officiate. Burial will be in the Lutheran Cemetery in Danville. Visitation will be held on Monday, January 26 from 9 to 11 a.m. at the church. Memorials may be made in Natalie's memory to Bethany the Comfort Dog or Trinity Lutheran Church in Danville. And Dorothy Wade, 94, of Oakwood, passed away at her home on January 17th at 9:14 p.m. A celebration of life will be held on Friday, January 23rd at 1 p.m. at Sunset Funeral Home and Cremation Center at 105 East Main, South Main Street in Oakwood, Illinois. Patty Wise will officiate. Burial will be in Oakwood Cemetery in Oakwood. Visitation will be held from 5 to 7 p.m. on Thursday, January 22nd at the funeral home in Oakwood. Memorial donations may be made to the Oakwood Library or to St. Jude's Children's Research Hospital. Next story, London Cox makes dean list at Olivet College, and this is in Bourbonnais. London Cox of Fairmount was named to the dean's list at Olivet Nazarene University during the recently completed fall semester. To qualify for inclusion on the dean's list, a student must have enrolled as a full-time undergraduate student and must have attained a semester grade point average of 3.5 or higher on a 4-point grading scale. Next story is titled A January Day at the Eichers. 4:30 a.m. Our alarm rings to awaken us for another day. Another day God granted to us. Are we thankful enough for his many blessings he sends? I packed my husband Joe's lunch with last night's leftovers of vegetable soup and fresh ham that was grilled at last night. I also put an apple and cookies in and fill a thermos with coffee. I fill his water jug with ice and water. 5 a.m., Joe left for work. Just son Benjamin left for the factory at 4 a.m. before we were up. He usually grabs some leftovers for his lunch. I get a cup of coffee and snuggle on the recliner to read, but I usually end up falling asleep for a few more hours on some days. 8:30 a.m. I took a shower, then gathered the laundry and threw it down to the basement. I used a cold air return vent on the floor for my laundry chute. Then I helped son Kevin get up in his mobility scooter. I am so thankful for that Hoyer lift since he is 6'4" tall. I used to be able to lift him easily. Joanna comes to help me wash our laundry. She stopped to get her daughter Vienna's laundry too, and we washed theirs too. 11 a.m. the laundry is done and drying on the lines in our warm basement. Daughter Loretta and her three little ones come over for lunch. Daughter Vienna joins us too. We heated up leftover soup and meat from last night. Denzel 3 and Byron 2 are really starting to look at books. They notice a lot of little things in the pictures. Kylie 1 is walking everywhere now. When she comes, we close the gate on the stairway and shut the bathroom door. She loves crawling into the wet shower and unraveling the toilet paper. After lunch, Loretta puts all the children down for a nap. I mix up a batch of sugar cookies. I will chill the dough and make them tomorrow morning. Danielle, Ray, and Benjamin are home from their jobs and eat some leftovers too. I lost track of the time, so not really sure what time they came home. 3 p.m. Joe is home from work. Loretta is getting ready to leave, and the children are glad to see Grandpa Joe before they leave. Daughter Lavina, Daniel, and the baby Brooklyn stop in for a while. Brooklyn is asleep in the stroller, so I didn't disturb her. She looked so sweet. Daniel was pushing the stroller, and Lavina was driving her electric wheelchair. They were going to go on a walk since the temperature is 50 degrees and much warmer than it should be for this time of the year. 4 p.m., Daniel Ray is digging a small trench to bury some wires for our solar power. We sure appreciate all the sunshine we had today. It helps charge that backup batteries for our solar power. Benjamin walks down to my sister Vienna's house to get her mail. She is staying with my sister Liz and Lovey for several weeks. Benjamin does this evening chores after he gets back. 5 p.m. I start supper, which is pawn hoss that Dustin's and Daniel and Lavina gave to us when they butchered pork. I make some Make coffee soup, fried eggs, and toast with that. 6 p.m. supper's ready. It's still hard to get used to cooking for only 4 people now. 8 p.m. everyone is settled for the night. Kevin and I are still awake and reading. I like to sit in my recliner and unwind at night. I finally have time, have my reader mail all answered and ready for the mail tomorrow. I am sorry for the late responses to some of you. It's so easy to push it off for another day. I really do appreciate all your kind letters and encouragement. It means more than you know. Good night, sweet dreams, and God bless. Slow news day, so we'll read some sports. Historic Hoosiers prevail in title game, written by Parker Rogers in Indiana, by Miami. Indiana was never supposed to be there. By the end of the season, it was the only team left. The Hoosiers defeated Miami 27-21 on Monday night at Hard Rock Stadium to win the program's first national championship, closing a season defined by overwhelming dominance and extraordinary timing, answering every moment that demanded it. Even as the number one seed in the 12-team playoff, the Hoosiers rarely felt favored in the eyes of college football and analysts and fans. That skepticism carried into the national championship game played by in Miami's home stadium, the first time a team has ever played a national championship on its own field. Inside Hard Rock Stadium, however, the crowd leaned crimson, with Indiana fans outnumbering Hurricane supporters from kickoff to the final kneel. Miami's defensive line ensured the title game would be physical. The Hurricanes disrupted Indiana's run game and pressured quarterback Fernando Mendoza, bloodifying his mouth throughout the night. They tallied 3 sacks and 6 tackles for loss, turning the contest into a grind. When Miami cut the deficit to 3 on Mark Fletcher's 57-yard touchdown run early in the third quarter, the momentum began to shift away from the Hoosiers and the doubt began to creep back in. But the Hoosiers never seemed to doubt themselves, and they answered back the way they had all season. Midway through the third quarter, defensive lineman punt Mikel Kamara burst past a blocker and blocked a punt that rolled into the end zone. Linebacker Isaiah Jones recovered it for a touchdown, giving the Hoosiers a sudden swing that steadied them once again. I just watched the ball, got off the ball as fast as I could, and shot my shot, and I heard that double thud, Kamara said. Miami refused to fade, trimming the lead to 3 again early in the fourth quarter. With pressure mounting, the Hoosiers leaned on Heisman Trophy winning quarterback Fernando Mendoza. And I have to change pages here. Sorry about that. Hoosiers. Facing 4th and 5 from the 12-yard line, Hoosier coach Kurt Kignetti decided to take a chance. Rather than attempting a field goal, he decided to go for it. Fernando Mendoza kept the ball, absorbed contact near the 5-yard line, spun and stretched the ball across the goal line to restore a 10-point lead. It was 4th down, Mendoza said. No matter what it is, you've got to put it on the line. That's something I was willing to do. The Hurricanes had one final push left. Miami scored another touchdown, this one on a 22-yard catch and run by wide receiver Malachi Toney. Indiana then drove down the field and settled for Nico Redick field goal, making the scores 27-21 with 1 minute and 42 seconds remaining, and the Hurricanes out of timeouts. Abetted by a roughing the passer penalty and needing a touchdown and extra point to win, Miami drove to the IU 41-yard line. Indiana needed one last big play to stifle the Hurricanes and win the championship. Defensive back Jamari Sharp, like Mendoza, Miami native, provided it. With less than a minute remaining, he intercepted a pass from Miami quarterback Carson Beck near the IU 15-yard line, sealing the championship. After Mendoza knelt with the ball to run out the game clock, the legions of Hoosier fans in the stands and across the nation could start the ultimate celebration in an undefeated season of celebrations. I was sitting there praying for something to happen, and Jamari Sharp Bell dis out, said All-American offensive tackle Carter Smith, who had committed a false start on IU's last drive that led to the Hoosiers settling for a field goal. Sharp's interception was the final example in a season defined by clutch responses. On October 11th, Indiana sealed its first top victory against Oregon with a late interception and a clutch drive led by Mendoza after he had thrown a pack six to tie the game. 4 weeks later, wide receiver Omar Cooper Jr. preserved the Hoosiers' perfect season with an aerobatic game-winning catch at Penn State. And in the Big Ten championship game on December 6th, IU defeated number one-ranked Ohio State after Mendoza completed a key third-down pass along the sideline to wide receiver Charlie Becker. If you prepare the right way, which this team did week in, week out, and put it on the field, we met the challenge every single week, Cignetti said. Inside the post-game IU locker room Monday night in Hard Rock Stadium, the celebration reflected joy, relief, and a sense of finality. Cignetti, known for his nonsense approach, let cigar smoke fill the air as rap music blared nonstop. Players FaceTime friends and family, step photos, and embrace teammates. "I always dreamed of being a champion," wide receiver Elijah Serrett said. "To be here in the moment to see the work pay off, it's surreal." A massive ring symbolizing the national championship was passed from hand to hand as players soaked in the historic moment. IU had gone from being the losingest program in college football history to the first 16-0 national championship team of the modern era in a span of 5 months. The Hoosiers had become champions of the Big Ten, the Rose Bowl, the Peach Bowl, and now college football playoffs. They had vanquished every foe and proved doubters wrong. That was a pretty neat game. And Bunton to retire at DACCAD. In Danville Area Community College Athletics Director Tim Bunton is ready for the next chapter in his life. Bunton will take advantage of DACC's voluntary separation program, and the DACC board will consider approving the retirements of Bunton and accounts payable specialist Jonah Bolton. Both would each get $35,000 on May 31st in the retirements if they are approved. Bunton, who will retire on June 1st, started at DACC in 1995 as baseball coach before adding athletics director for the 2006-07 season after spending 8 years as associate athletics director. He would step down from baseball during the shortened 2020 season. One more quick story. Fatal semi-crash in Tippecanoe County. The Indiana State Police is conducting an investigation following the death of a semi-truck driver in a crash involving three commercial vehicles in Tippecanoe County. The crash happened on Tuesday around 3:45 p.m. near mile marker 176, according to the media release. Police said the driver of a 2023 Freightliner semi-truck and trailer crashed into two other semi-trucks stopped in traffic southbound on Interstate 65 due to a separate crash, which happened around 3:15 p.m. in the same area. The driver of the 2023 Freightliner was pronounced dead on the scene by a Tippecanoe County coroner. The deceased's name is being withheld until family is notified. The other two semi drivers were not hurt. The Battleground Fire Department, the Lafayette Fire Department, Tippecanoe County Emergency Medical Services, the Tippecanoe County Coroner's Office, and the Sheriff's Department assisted in the ISP. The investigation is ongoing, according to the ISP, with no other information to be released at this time. So that'll be it for today, Thursday, January 22nd, 2026. Looks like it's going to be a really cold weekend starting tomorrow morning, so make sure you have your heavy coat and gloves and hats and scarves and be ready for it, or stay in the house, whatever. Anyway, I hope you all have a good week, and hopefully I'll see you again next week. Take care. Bye.